Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The untold story behind chocolate production. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn. Today is December 5th, 2013, and we are on day two of our world article, Children of Cocoa Farms. You can find it on pages 12 and 13 in your Advanced magazine. And I hope you were with us yesterday as we got into this really interesting article talking about child labor and some really pretty harsh conditions in West Africa, where children are often forced to harvest cocoa beans. And also, we learned about some companies and what they are doing or not doing to help improve this situation. And also, we met a couple of at least one politician who had introduced some measures in the past to try and compel companies to work on this. So it's a complicated issue, like so many things in the global economy, and it's much deeper than most of us realize. We often might just go to the convenience store and buy our favorite candy bar, and we don't realize how many steps that it has taken to get to that point, how many hands are involved, and how many companies, and also the money that's involved with this. Back for day two are my two panelists, Catherine Huff and Josh Mooney. Hi, panelists.
Hi, Bill.
Great to have you back for day two. Before we get into day one, let me get a thought from yesterday, just as a quick review point from each one of our panelists. So let me go first off to my right, Catherine.
Okay. Well, I think that one of the most important things that struck me yesterday was that they're trying to work on increasing education for the kids. I think that the more education a child has, the more opportunities he or she has later in life. And that's something that could really help battle poverty in these countries someday.
Why do most of the kids in Africa not get an education?
Because I think in Africa, the mindset is that you have to make money at any cost. And so a lot of times, maybe the parents need their children to work so that they can make a living and put food on the table. Mm-hmm. So education becomes secondary to making money or finding food for the family.
Yeah. And a lot of what we take for granted, like schools, mm-hmm. they just don't even have that infrastructure because mm-hmm. The governments are a mess. There has been places that have just been plagued with war for decades. Mm-hmm. And the concept of a community school where children go and are taught on a daily basis, that's even beyond anything, mm-hmm. their wildest imagination. So, yeah, they just don't have that infrastructure in these places. All right. Josh, give me a thought.
Well, we talked a lot about this issue of human trafficking. And you've probably read some of these terms, whether it's slavery, abduction, talking about sexual slavery. And I think this is an interesting look and a very sad look that these kids aren't forced into sexual slavery. It's just farming slavery and doing backbreaking work in terrible conditions for upwards of 100 hours a week, and some of them not even getting paid. So I think these are probably terms that you've seen in another context and interesting to see them in the agriculture.
Yeah, as I was looking up some research information on this and reading about Cargill and some of the other companies, what they had to deal with, there have actually been some court cases filed against the large companies because the statements indicated that a lot of these children were taken from other countries as far as in that same area. For instance, Sierra Leone and some other places that have had a lot of war and fighting, the kids are just wandering around. They will actually be gathered up by essentially gangsters who will go and they will go gather up piles of kids, right? Groups of kids, and they will truck them off to farms in Ghana or the Ivory Coast. And the kids have no choice in this matter. They're just put on buses and taken off, and then they're forced to work at these farms. They're far from their home, and they are forced to pick cocoa beans for 12 to 14 hours a day. They're not paid anything, and they're just all 10, 15, 20 of them are forced to sleep in shacks at night. So it is, you know, for some of these kids, it's a ruthless situation, and it's a hopeless situation.
And the companies aren't denying that it's happening. Right. We met yesterday the CEO of Cargill, a company you mentioned in the Midwest of the United States. Not a small company by any means, right, Bill?
No, it's a huge company. For a lot of people may not realize this, Cargill, it's private, but if they were public, they would be number 9 on the Fortune 500 list. Just ahead, I think, of Ford Motor Company.
Whoa.
So that's the size of the company. $137 billion in revenue, about 140,000 employees. So huge global conglomerate or a private company. Most people don't even know about them.
Right. Because they're private, they don't have to report a lot of things about their business that they would if they were public.
Cargill, like another company we mentioned, ADM. Archer Daniels Midland, they deal in agricultural products, a lot of commodities, grains, soybeans, cocoa beans, all sorts of things like that, crops, chicken. Cargill's big in chicken. Well, you might think, well, how much money can a company make selling chickens? You sell billions of chickens, you'll make a lot of money.
I read somewhere every egg that McDonald's uses is processed by Cargill.
Uh-huh. You can imagine how many eggs they process. So these companies, it's very interesting, Cargill and ADM, they've kind of fly under the radar. They aren't subjected to the media attention that a lot of other more famous companies that we know about in chocolate, like Hershey or Mars or other company, Cadbury places, companies like that. So they've been left off the hook, haven't they, a little bit?
Yeah, they have. I mean, whenever you're buying chocolate, you see the brand name, Hershey's or Nestle or whatever. You don't see the company that produces it. So you don't even know about them half the time.
Yeah. So that's why we talked about at the end of the day yesterday, the big public names, the ones that we know about, Mars and Hershey, they have been at the forefront of this, trying to fight child labor. Cargill, ADM have been a little bit slow. But today, as we get into our reading, well, they're going to say, well, we have been doing our part of this bargain. We'll find out. So turn to page 13, and we will split our reading up into three sections today. Cargill's plans. Cargill officials say the company is among the industry's leading investors in the child labor fight. Cargill has spent $5 million in the past 3 years in Ivory Coast and Ghana on a program designed to end child labor abuse, Cargill's sustainable cocoa manager, Taco Terhagen, said. And Cargill should soon announce a 3-year extension of that initiative. But progress will continue to be incremental, Terhagen cautioned, because Cargill's program is based on empowering communities so they can take control of their own future. Job one has been increasing productivity to attack the poverty that forces children to leave school to work on cocoa farms, he said. Okay, yesterday in our third section, or called Making Progress, we had seen that the cocoa industry committed $10 million. Cocoa industry, that's all the companies, they contributed $10 million in remediation efforts. Now, here we see Cargill, a figure from them.
Yes, and you always like to point out, Bill, to look to see who is sharing these quotes with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have an ulterior motive? And here it's the Cargill officials, meaning their heads of PR and heads of marketing, saying that they're among the leaders in this fight against child labor. And they back up that claim by telling us they've spent $5 million over the past 3 years.
Well, it might sound impressive being we're one of the industry leading investors. However, you have to keep it, you know, in perspective. So
it doesn't sound like anyone's doing much. So
right.
You're leading a pack of a lot of inactive companies.
That's right. Say I've got a company, you've got a company, and Katie's got a company, and Catherine puts in $1, you put in $2, I put in $3, I could say I'm the industry leader.
And collectively we're getting nowhere.
Right. So we see $5 million in the past 3 years in Ivory Coast and Ghana on a program designed to end child labor abuse. That comes from Cargill's spokesperson, Taco Terhijin. And, you know, I had mentioned yesterday as far as their overall revenue, or maybe even today, $137 billion. So it's not a huge amount they're spending on this.
No, it's not. But I like to look at the bright side, and I think at least they're doing something in addition to what they've already committed. They are putting something toward it.
Is this progress from maybe 50 years ago?
I think it is, but I don't think that they're doing all that they can. So it may not be as much progress as we would expect.
Okay. So it's better than maybe 50 years ago, but
yeah,
they could be doing more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm thinking this kind of ties in with the article we did last month as far as corporate giving, a corporate with a conscience,
mm-hmm,
right? And how companies, because of the millennials, now have to be more responsible. The millennial generation, of course, is going to be up on things digitally,
mm-hmm,
and they're going to pick up if somebody's not doing the job right. There's so much more media. That's why I asked about this thing, is it better than 50 years ago? Because maybe 50 years ago, the number might have been $0, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably 20 years ago. You're probably going back too far.
Yeah.
I think it is a fairly recent phenomenon of,
mm-hmm,
people asking, where does this come from?
Yeah.
And I know National Public Radio in the States did a program you can find online where they traced where a T-shirt comes from and all the different elements of cotton production and polyester and what goes into it. And they actually put it on the back of the T-shirt instead of just made in. No,
right.
No. It listed all the different places in the world,
mm-hmm,
that contributed
so
to the
cool
production of a T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. The millennials, the Gen Y, they're starting to ask those questions of, you know, what is my $5 or, you know, whatever money I'm spending on this candy,
mm,
where, what impact is that having globally?
Yeah. And so at least now there is some progress because – and I asked if this was progress from 50 years ago. You had mentioned 20 years ago, because I can guarantee you 50 years ago there was child labor.
Sure.
And even less was being done 50 years ago. No, nobody even cared. Nobody even asked those questions. Like you said, where's this coming from? Who's gathering this up? At least, okay, it's not the best situation now, but at least we're asking these questions. So, all right, finish that paragraph off. Says Cargill should soon announce a 3-year extension of that initiative, of that program that they are running with. But progress will continue to be
incremental, says Taco, that it's going to take time. It'll happen in small amounts. And I think I have issue with that. I think you're the ones buying the cocoa beans from the farmers. Why does it have to be incremental? You control the power here. Why not just tell the farmers you're not going to buy the beans from them if they were produced by children?
I had a problem with this also. I thought that was passing the buck, passing the responsibility on to empowering communities. And I think that's a noble idea. However, in West Africa, empowering communities, you're talking about something really difficult,
mm-hmm,
because communities are not organized how we think they are organized, how we are used to in developed economies. There, in many communities, there is no organization. So how can you empower communities if there is really no central organization? So, and I think there's too much here passing the responsibility on to these communities. Job one has been doing what?
Increasing the productivity to attack the poverty that forces children to leave school to work on the cocoa farms. So this is a little bit what we talked about yesterday about increasing revenue and profits so that children can stay in school, so that they can focus on educating children.
Okay.
But if the parents aren't in the picture anyway, I don't get how that would hurt, how that would help. Making the farmers more profitable when these aren't their kids they're hiring and these kids are bussed in from other countries.
I was thinking that as I read this also. I don't see the extra profit being passed on to the citizens of that community.
No.
If past models are our guide for the future, typically what has happened is the person who is running the business, has the farm, will keep the money. They're not going to distribute the wealth amongst the community residents. Let's get into our next reading.
The root of the problem. About 70% of the world's cocoa production comes from West Africa. Unlike many types of farming, cocoa growing is dominated by relatively small farms. An estimated 1.8 million children work on cocoa farms in Ivory Coast and Ghana combined. Child labor practices in the cocoa industry came under scrutiny around 2000 after media exposés about child trafficking and slave labor. In response, Harkin and Representative Elliot Engel of New York negotiated with governments, nonprofit groups, and the world's largest cocoa and chocolate companies, including Cargill.
This section is titled The Root of the Problem, and I even underlined that root of the problem.
That's right. The root of the problem is the very single reason for everything, basically.
Okay. All right. We have a big picture, and we know something's wrong, and there's a lot of things wrong, but the root of the problem, we also might say the heart of the matter, the core issue of what is behind this. And how do we get into this reading?
Well, that 70% of the world's cocoa production comes from West Africa. So one of the major issues here is that chocolate buyers, Hershey's and those kinds of companies, they can't get cocoa made elsewhere.
Now, I'm going to back up just a second on what you just said. Now, chocolate buyers like Hershey's, Mars, or Cadbury, they are buying then the cocoa beans from Cargill in ADM, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a middleman there.
Right.
Yeah.
So the names we are familiar with when it comes to chocolate, they aren't actually on the front line buying it from the villagers and these people and the farmers, right? It's actually Cargill and ADM, and then Cargill and ADM sell it to Hershey's and Mars and those companies.
That's right.
And I think that's an important distinction for our listeners to know that. So,
but of course, Hershey's has major influence here.
They can say,
Cargill, show me where the beans came from.
Right.
And if Cargill says, well, of course, it came from West Africa, Joe, because that's the only place that it grows.
Right.
If cost effectively.
So the end manufacturers actually could have some influence and say, look, we're not going to buy this stuff from you guys if it's gathered this way.
And consumers could have influence, too, if we all decided to give up chocolate. But who's willing to do that? Not my wife.
Unlike many types of farming.
Well, cocoa growing is dominated by relatively small farms. And it says that an estimated 1.8 million children work on farms in the Ivory Coast and Ghana.
Coming from West Texas, you know a little bit about farming and what the setup is with farms. What's happening in the farming industry, at least over the last 25 years?
Well, basically a lot of the farms have become more corporate. They're not run by individuals anymore. And in Africa, as we've talked about earlier, they're often family-run or small business owner-run.
Right. So that's what that sentence is saying. In America, Canada, it's all corporate farms now. Big, big money, but it's a whole different thing in Africa, small farms. And now there's also – we see how many children are forced to work on these farms.
That's right. Almost 2 million children work on cocoa farms. Doesn't say they're all forced to, Bill. Just says they're all working there.
Yeah, that's an important distinction because Josh did talk about some family farms have children of their own, the family members working on them. But a large portion, a large percentage of this almost 2 million are kids who are forced.
And no one will argue that the work is incredibly difficult.
No.
I'm not sure
anyone
would say that children should be doing this work.
Right.
I mean, it is back-breaking labor.
Yeah, it's just tiring and it's just brutal. I said 12 or 14 hours a day. Now, child labor practices
came under scrutiny around 2000 after media exposés about child trafficking and slave labor. So if something comes under scrutiny, that means that it's just carefully examined.
And a media expose.
Well, an expose is a public report about a situation, especially one that has been kept secret. I think a lot of times we hear about exposés on celebrities.
Yeah.
That's where I most often hear the word.
Have you ever been the subject of an expose, Catherine?
I have not.
No?
I have not, no.
The paparazzi didn't picture you coming out of a theater with a famous celebrity?
No, sorry. That has never happened.
I always have to think of 60 Minutes, Bill, the famous
yeah.
TV show that do those hard-hitting corporate interviews with the vice president sweating on the other side of the desk.
Right.
Saying, why are you asking me these tough questions?
Right, the expose. We are uncovering the real untold story. So, well, the real untold story that came out in 2000 was about child trafficking and slave labor. Up until that point, most consumers certainly didn't think about that.
No, and these TV shows do play a role in in informing the public on things like this that we're just not aware of, and then moving us into action. And in this case, the response of that television show was the legislators stepping in. Harkin, who we talked about yesterday, and Representative Elliot Engel of New York, who then negotiated with the major stakeholders.
Okay, who did they negotiate with?
Well, they negotiated with the governments, nonprofit groups, and the world's largest cocoa and chocolate companies, which included Cargill.
Okay. Governments would have been the governments of Ivory Coast and Ghana. They would have spoken certainly with their ambassadors to the United States and maybe on further on up the chain of command in those countries. Nonprofit groups are going to be people fighting this, right?
Right. We talked about one yesterday, a World Cocoa Foundation. There's a sustainable cocoa company or organization as well. So there are, I don't think they're large groups, but there are some NGOs, some non-governmental organizations that are out there trying to tackle this situation.
I can think of even, there are specific groups that are fighting trafficking and things like that. Around the globe, so, and then also the chocolate company. So they did try something in response, and we're going to learn a little bit more about this Hardin-Engel protocol in our final reading.
The Hardin-Engel protocol. The result was the Hardin-Engel protocol, a voluntary agreement aimed at stopping the worst forms of child labor. The U.S. Labor Department has paid Tulane University to monitor child labor in Ivory Coast and Ghana. In its final report in 2011, Tulane's Payson Center for International Development said Hardin-Engel served as a catalyst for action and that there is significant evidence of its impact. The cocoa industry and nonprofit groups had created child labor remediation efforts in 290 communities in the two countries, reaching about 650,000 people. Still, the cocoa industry's funding of anti-child labor issues had not been sufficient, the report concluded.
Okay, after all of these negotiations between countries and governments and nonprofit organizations and companies, the result was the Hardin-Engel Protocol, a voluntary agreement aimed at stopping the worst forms of child labor. Voluntary agreement.
Yes, they've asked these companies to step in and commit to making changes, but the changes will not, if they don't do it, there won't be any consequences.
All right. Now, to help out, to audit this, to monitor this, the U.S. Labor Department, who did they bring in?
They brought in Tulane University to monitor the labor in the Ivory Coast and Ghana.
Okay. Tulane University out of New Orleans, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And what did they report in 2011?
Well, they said that the Hardin-Engel Protocol served as a catalyst for action and that there's significant evidence of its impact. And a catalyst for something is a condition, event, or person that is the cause of an important change. It's usually the first thing that starts things going.
Okay. Now, we had seen remediation, one of our vocab focus words, yesterday, and we use it again in the first sentence of this final paragraph.
Yes, it says the cocoa industry and nonprofit groups had created child labor remediation efforts. So here we're going back to some of the stakeholders in this fight. Of course, the cocoa industry being one of them, and then some of the nonprofit groups we talked about. And these two are coming together to help eradicate this dangerous problem.
Okay, and they did this in 290 communities in two countries, Ghana and Ivory Coast, reaching about 650,000 people. And I'll tell you what, it's hard work, especially for these nonprofit groups. Let me give you paint a picture for you. Just imagine Catherine works for maybe an organization trying to prevent trafficking and child labor, and she's walking around. She's on the ground, and she's going from village to village, and she's got her computer and her clipboard, and she's talking to people and taking notes, and she's out there. She's got to spend a year or 2 years gathering research, and so it's really challenging work for these people to try and solve this problem. Not easy, because a lot of people are going to get in the way.
Yes.
Now, they said there's some progress made, but still...
Well, still, the cocoa industry's funding of these anti-child labor issues has not been sufficient. So that's kind of what we were saying earlier, is that they're not putting enough money into it.
Yeah. We had been talking about numbers.
And 5 million.
Thought, yeah. And this report says, you're right. It's not enough, right?
I had read ahead, but I did agree that I had a feeling this was coming. And I also read a little bit about the protocol. They're trying to get rid of child labor in the cocoa industry by 2020. And I don't think they're on the way to do that.
I don't see that's how it's going to happen. Unless everybody wants to pay $10 for a bag of M&Ms. Hmm. I don't see how it's going to happen, because this is part of the economy of this whole business. And I don't see it happening. Now, we do have one small sidebar there. Let me have Catherine read it real quickly.
Okay. Problem practice. One of the most egregious practices is trafficking children into the Ivory Coast from neighboring countries, Burkina Faso and Mali, then forcing them to work on cocoa farms.
Okay, there's a couple of those war-torn countries right next to them. Children are very vulnerable. One good word in here, egregious, Josh.
That's right. Just very horrible. Something that's inexcusable.
All right. Listeners, I hope this has been helpful and educational for everybody. It's something that a lot of people may not have known about. Thanks for joining us today. Come on back next time. Till then, this is Bill.
Josh.
And Catherine.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.